Hi, this is Cody Ann Hines, and welcome to my Critical Family History podcast. For this podcast, I want to explore my great-grandfather on my mom's side, Gerhard Fredriksen. I never met Gerhard, as he died in December 1975, but I've heard stories about him through my Grammy and mom. One of the many things that my Grammy and I bonded over was our family history. She would watch my brother and I every weekday while my parents worked, so I spent plenty of hours with her hearing about my family history. Unfortunately, my Grammy passed away right before I moved to Seattle, so I'm unable to ask her what the field of genealogy meant to her. Instead, all I have to reflect on is what these conversations with her mean to me. I think it was a way for my Grammy to open up the world to me, while also reminding me to remember where I came from. When she connected my heritage to Denmark, Germany, France, and the British Isles, she was really making a connection to the greater world that we live in, or at least that's how I choose to see it. I'm a first-generation college student, and the first member of my family to live outside the Northeast. So the idea that I could travel and learn about a place away from home was one of the most precious gifts that anyone could have given me. Otherwise, who's to know where I would be if this worldview wasn't presented to me at such a young age? As for what it meant to my Grammy, I think genealogy was a way for her to connect to her parents and their homeland. My Grammy was born to Danish immigrants in New York City, and she never left the U.S. to visit Denmark. Her parents both left Denmark as young children, and as is evident from the 1940 census data where they put English as their language, her parents were quick to assimilate to American ways. They did not eat typical Danish foods except for desserts around the holidays. They did not speak the Danish language unless they were upset, and they especially did not teach it to their four children, including my grandmother. They didn't wear traditional clothing, and they hardly spoke of their homeland. At least, I assume they didn't, because if they did, I'm sure my Grammy would have told me what she remembered her parents telling her. Instead, she told me what she did know, and one person I resonated with in particular was her father, Gerhard. Born in 1895, he immigrated as a young boy from Denmark with his family. His father died when he was young, so all the kids had to work. As a young man, he traveled around the world as a cook in the U.S. Navy, traveling down the eastern coast of the Western Hemisphere and up the Western African coast to Europe. He was a father of four, a husband, and ran the Waffle Inn in New Hampshire in his later years of life. I don't know why his family moved here in the early years of the 20th century. But like many other European countries were experiencing at the time, the prospects of the U.S. seemed great. It was a typical story of letters being written by Danish families in the U.S. back home to Denmark, describing how great their lives were in America. These letters were commonly printed in local Danish newspapers, which made immigrating to the U.S. seem like an exciting adventure full of opportunity. The Virginia Commonwealth University Social History Welfare Project lays out the steps for the naturalization process in the early 20th century of the U.S. Congressional Act 34, Statute 596, made it so immigrants like Gerhard and Elin would have to start by filing a declaration of intention. This status was referred to as first paper, according to Ancestry.com's Naturalization Record Index. This declaration established the immigrant's oath to become a U.S. citizen, thereby residing in the U.S. and renouncing allegiance to all other nations. It was only after 2 to 7 years of having the first papers that an applicant could then petition for citizenship. An investigation of the immigrant would then follow and be brought before a judge, and if the judge found the findings and recommendations of witnesses to be in good faith, then the immigrant could be naturalized. This meant that they again renounced all foreign allegiances and swore an oath of allegiance to the U.S. Constitution and the laws of the country. With this context in mind, we come to Gerhard's immigration story. As I said before, Gerhard came to the U.S. as a young boy and worked from a young age to support his family. His experience of coming to the U.S. is one that I know nothing about. What I do know about it is how he gained his citizenship when Elin was pregnant with my grandmother. According to a story that my Grammy told me, Sometime in 1938, the year that my grandmother was born, Gerhard, Elin, and my great-aunt Con were living in Sunset Park, a neighborhood known as Little Norway or Finntown in Brooklyn. Again, according to my Grammy, around this time the U.S. government was sending officials throughout the Scandinavian district looking for undocumented immigrants. Apparently, Gerhard himself was undocumented, despite being 43 years old and immigrating to the U.S. as a young boy. Honestly, I have no idea how he did this or if he shared the same status with his family. Hearing the government officials were deporting undocumented immigrants, Gerhard decided to leave a pregnant Elin and Con to leave the city for a while until he could figure out his papers. I don't know where he went, but I know he left New York City. So the next part of the story gets more interesting. Gerhard finds himself hiding from the government with a wife, daughter, and baby on the way. He needs to figure out a way to stay in the country. He first goes to an immigration office to file paperwork for citizenship, but is told that it will take months. Gerhard argues that he doesn't have that kind of time. He has a baby on the way and a wife and a daughter to support. He pleads with the immigration official, a woman I might add, to please help him, but the official declines. So Gerhard takes the natural next steps and decides to finagle her. He goes out and buys chocolates and flowers and shows up at the office again. Again, Gerhard tells the woman about his pregnant wife and daughter and how he has to support them. He would really appreciate it if she helped him out. And like that, he receives his papers and heads right back to Brooklyn, a citizen. Well, at least this is the narrative that my Grammy always told me. But reviewing the 1940 census data and historical process of naturalization has me rethinking this narrative. According to the census data that occurred 2 years after Gerhard supposedly gained citizenship, Gerhard actually was not a citizen. Elin, which is written on the census as Ellen, because apparently Elin was too hard to say or write for the officials, as well as my great aunt and Grammy, were listed as citizens. But Gerhard's immigration status is listed as first papers on the census. This means that he was in the beginning stages of naturalization, but not yet a citizen. I did find his, for lack of a better document name, alien registration card, which says that he successfully petitioned for citizenship on November 19, 1945, which, according to what we said earlier, was 2 years later than he could have originally petitioned for citizenship. But I'm getting caught up in the details that honestly don't matter to this story, and honestly shouldn't matter to immigration status in general. At the end of the day, Gerhard was able to stay in the U.S., but was it as simple as manipulating a female official with some treats and a cute smile? For a man like Gerhard, probably yes. The Great Depression was still occurring, so who knows how valuable and meaningful those chocolates and flowers were at the time. Furthermore, Gerhard was a fully assimilated man. He was extremely white, spoke perfect English, and was a hardworking Protestant man without a criminal record. With a little charm and confidence mixed with his positionality, it's really no surprise that the woman let him back into the country. So, what does this story represent in connection to current-day immigration to the U.S.? Our society is consumed with hate speech, fear of terrorism, and demonizing refugees from all parts of the world. We can't ignore the videos and pictures of people dying by drowning, gunshot, heat exposure, and disease simply as they fight for opportunities that were also promised to Gerhard and Elin when they immigrated to the U.S. But unlike my great-grandparents, current-day non-white European immigrants can't simply buy a ticket into the U.S. with their handsome looks and charms. And unlike Gerhard and Elin, who could fully assimilate as white Northern Europeans into another white-dominated society by throwing away all traditional ways of Danish life, today's immigrants do not have that luxury. Even if they only speak English, wear quote-unquote American-style clothing, and denounce their culture, they're still racially marginalized because of the American society they are entering into. As is discussed in social studies, literacy, and social justice in the Common Core classroom, we must connect the past to the present so that we're able to see systematically how racist and discriminatory entities exist in society today. Gerhardt's story is an example of this. If I were to only think and retell Gerhardt's story as a cute, Gene Kelly-esque story of that one time my great-grandpa almost got deported, it would really lose the themes of fear and uncertainty that surrounded the lives of immigrants and still surround them today. And it also will lose the historical systemic privileges allotted to white immigrants who assimilate to American society. As the reading argues, if we don't hold a critical lens to history, even that of our own personal histories, we will feel little personal responsibility to the relevant events of today. I still appreciate other stories and lessons taught to me about Gerhardt and his personal journey. Through his tales of travel and work ethic, I felt inspired to explore my own opportunities beyond conventional life in a small Vermont village. Like Gerhardt, I've traveled the world, and like him, I've also worked hard by personally pursuing higher education. But I'm also critical of these stories and understand that his story does not remain in the past. The story of citizenship and my critical analysis of it now live in the present. It reminds us that we can continue to explore and dismantle discriminatory structures that push down rather than lift up the immigrants of today. It's our responsibility to take stories like this and to do something about it. We have to do better.